Good morning. Thanks for rejoining me on the Meg Ellefson Show. We're already at hour three on this Fab Friday. If you've missed any of the programming during the course of the 4.5 hours of programming gold, you can go out to WSAU.com and it's there for your listening enjoyment. Share it to like-minded and maybe persuadable voters. I am very happy to have joining me again on the show United States Congressman Brian Steil. He serves Wisconsin's first congressional district. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining me. I appreciate it. Let's talk, first of all, so our listeners are aware of the first congressional district, where it begins and where it ends.
It's Janesville and Beloit over to Racine and Kenosha, and then up into Milwaukee County. It's about 7 of the southern suburbs of Milwaukee County, about 25% of the landmass. And so it is a kind of the 50-50 type district in the state of Wisconsin. You got, you know, historically Democratic communities. You get the rural area in between, and you get the suburbs of Milwaukee. It's a beautiful area of the state.
So I guess it would be safe to say it's sort of a purple district, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit like Wisconsin as a whole, which is good. It allows me to go out and talk about the issues that matter and puts me in positions to be able to walk people through why conservatives have the answers to the biggest challenges of the day. Everything from talking to folks in more urban areas about the importance of school choice to talking to people in rural areas about the importance of securing the U.S.-Mexico border, where we've seen a huge influx of immigrants of migrants into the U.S., including in the community of Whitewater, a city of 15,000 people, where the police chief has announced they have roughly 1,000 migrants, primarily from Nicaragua and Venezuela, who've come in the past 2 years.
So, Congressman Steil, you have a dinosaur Democrat challenger this time around. And, you know, I was surprised, actually. I always like to hope that we have some safe districts, but evidently that's not the case with yours. It's the Democrats are pouring money, presumably from out of state, into your district to try to upset you.
Yeah, dark money outside liberal groups have spent well over $2 million just on Milwaukee TV alone over the course of the past few months attacking me. You know, they used to tell World War II bomber pilots that you catch the most flack when you're right over the target. I'm catching a lot of flack. They spent more against me than any member, any Republican in the United States House of Representatives. And so the end result here is that I'm right over the target. I'm continuing my work as chairman of the Committee on House Administration to move us forward on election integrity, fighting against the reckless spending of the Biden administration, working to secure the border. I'm more than happy to take the arrows for actually doing the work to move this country forward.
Well, let's talk about something that you recently posted on X about Washington, D.C. I mean, you know, I guess I can't even say anymore, Congressman Steil, that I am shocked by anything that I see that is happening in our country. But I thought of all things that at least we could agree, Republicans and Democrats could agree that only citizens should be allowed to vote in our elections.
Yes, this is just unbelievable what we're seeing municipalities, including our nation's capital, do in this regard. So my committee, House Administration, oversees federal election law, which puts me front and center on the fight for election integrity. And what I got notice of is Washington, D.C.'s Election Commission sent out at taxpayer expense postcards to everyone in the district telling people that non-citizens are eligible to vote in our nation's capital for municipal elections. So think about what this means. And this is true. Under current law, non-citizens can vote for mayor in the upcoming election. This means the ambassador of Russia, if they reside in our nation's capital for 30 days, would be eligible to vote in our nation's capital. This is how absurd the laws are that are on the books and why my bill that bans non-citizens voting, and in particular bans non-citizens from voting in Washington, D.C., is so essential to actually pass. Where the left is willing to go is just unbelievable to those of us that believe in core principles and in particular believe that U.S. elections should be for U.S. citizens. I'm at the forefront of this fight. I'm hopeful that my bill can get its day on the House floor. We passed it out of committee. We're ready to go. And I think now, in the coming weeks, we'll have that opportunity.
So for our maybe some Democrat voters that are listening to this show, Do you anticipate bipartisan support on this bill, Congressman Style?
We held a hearing in conjunction with the Oversight Committee, and the Democrats more or less defended this legislation in a try to, you know, muddy the waters on the facts. The facts are pretty clear. The law in our nation's capital, passed by radical liberals, is absolutely out of line with what American voters and the American public wants. The question is, are the elected Democrats in Washington, D.C., so beholden to the radical left that they will stand in support of allowing non-citizens to vote, or will they actually be reasonable and rational? Time will tell. It's all the more important to put them on the record on this issue, because Washington, D.C. and the city council and the mayor passed this legislation. So it is not as if there aren't radical Democrats that support this. The question is, will the national Democrats, as we bring this to the forefront of the American public, continue to stand behind the radical left, or will they try to pivot, knowing that an election is now just 200 days away?
I mean, isn't this further proof that the objective in opening our borders wide is to import a new electorate, because the citizens here in this country realize how unpopular and how non-principled or unprincipled Democrats are, and so they realize, wow, we got to get some new voters in here. I mean, isn't it obvious to everyone now?
Well, when you see what the Democrats do on almost every issue, they're very good at what I call incrementalism, meaning they're willing to take one step forward, one step at a time, and slowly move us to the radical left. Conservatives, we often want 100% of what we want, or we're willing to jump off the cliff with our flag held high. And so I'm concerned when you see Democratic cities like Washington, D.C., or communities in Vermont or New York or other places that are allowing non-citizens to vote at the municipal level, what they're doing is really setting us up for allowing this and changing the federal law to allow them to vote in other elections. It's all the more reason that we have to stand strong now and make sure that we make our statement that U.S. elections should be only for U.S. citizens.
Do you think that, I mean, you've already described your constituency as somewhat divided. Do you think that this is an issue that could potentially win over reasonable, if that's even a thing, Democrat voters?
When I walk people through this issue and explain to them what's occurring in Washington, D.C., just as an example of what the radical left is trying to do, I often have people that don't believe me. We were actually PolitiFact on my statements on exactly this, and PolitiFact actually came back that it was true, which tells you it's wildly true. I don't think everyone realizes how radical the left has gotten and how ridiculous the policies are being pushed in some of our nation's largest cities until it's too late. It's the reason why we have to act aggressively early to stop this, because the fear, again, is Democrats operate under incrementalism. They'll take one step at a time until they march through and force all of us to do what they want. It's the reason I'm working to nip this in the bud earlier rather than later, because my concern is what the Democrats' end game is to allow non-citizens to vote.
Okay, so shifting over to the rent-a-mobs that we're seeing at universities, like elite universities like Columbia University, did you ever believe that you'd see the day where, and you know, I don't even like to use this term progressive, because I don't think there's anything progressive or there's no progress with those on the left, but that hatred for Jewish people is seen as, I don't know, progressive or the in thing? I mean, did you ever believe we'd see this in our lifetimes?
No, what we continue to see from the radical left is really just unbelievable. We see this playing out at our nation's universities across the country, from Columbia, where Speaker Mike Johnson went to recently, to USC on the other coast. And so the radical left has just become so aggressive, not only on our college campuses, but we see it across the board where there were calls to defund the police 4 years ago. We're still living with the ramifications of the defund the police movement by those on the radical left. And so the Democratic Party of today is not your grandfather's Democratic Party. This is an aggressive move and an aggressive shift towards socialism, towards government control, And in particular, as we see in a major shift in towards anti-Semitism that is really dangerous.
You know, and I guess I'm just often reminded, you know, just as you're talking about, this isn't your grandfather's or great-grandfather's Democrat Party, and just what they represent now. And I mean, what it boils down to is they want to control our lives. And I would like to believe that those on the left or even swing voters would realize that, I mean, who knows best how to walk in one's own shoes? And so that's why I want to believe, I want to hope that come November, we will see victories from the top of the ticket all the way down. And I mean, I guess obviously you're going to need help in your district. You have a Democrat that's running against you that's been in office since the beginning of time. I mean, I'm thinking, is Dave Obey about the same vintage as your opponent in the first congressional district?
I'd actually have to dust off the record books to figure that out. Peter Barca first ran for office in 1984 when Walter Mondale was the top of the ticket for the presidential race across the country. And so you have a 40-year history. This election for us is going to be about really strong policy differences between him and I. And I think that's actually healthy for the country and healthy for the state to have. We should have more conversations on the policies. And if you look back to when Peter Barca was the Democratic leader of the Liberals in Madison, there was an opportunity to ban sanctuary cities in the state. Peter Barca led the charge to allow sanctuary cities to continue in our state. I'm of the view that we need to secure the border. He's in the line of the open border radicals. And having that debate with the American public, with the folks in Southeast Wisconsin, is imperative, because the policies that are put forward in Washington, D.C., that are put forward in the state of Wisconsin, have a serious and direct impact on families in our state. I can't tell you how many moms and dads I've talked to that have lost a loved one to fentanyl. I've talked to moms and dads who've been impacted by rising crime in our communities. And it is the policies put forward by those on the radical left, supported by my opponent, that have a serious impact on our communities. And so I actually look forward to the next 200 days now to the election to have a robust and serious conversation about what policies we need in this country to move us forward. The more we're having that conversation, the more likely we are going to ultimately be successful this fall.
You know, it is surprising. I think Rush Limbaugh used to refer to candidates like Peter Barca as a retread. And it's surprising to me that this is what Democrats are putting forward as a legitimate, viable candidate against you. How many terms have you served so far, Congressman Style?
I've been in office for 5.5 years. And so some of this in kind of doing the research on my opponent, you got to dust off the memory book, because, you know, he passed a gas tax increase in Washington, D.C. that didn't go to roads and bridges, went to other purposes. He did that before I was legally allowed to drive. And so some of this is you got to dust off the book on all of these votes to really get an appreciation for how out of line his worldview is from mine. And again, having that robust policy conversation with folks in Wisconsin is going to be a really healthy thing, because at the end of the day, average voters are center-right voters, and they recognize the policies that we need to move our country forward. We're having the debate on the policies. Conservatives and Republicans win every time.
So obviously you're well aware of how Democrats are reluctant to even acknowledge the definition of a woman. And Joe Biden in his new rule, I suppose, in his effort to change Title IX, and how harmful that will be going forward for women and girls here in the United States.
Yeah, no, it's just a continuation of the radical left. It's one issue after the next. There's really no indication as to where some of these folks would stop. And we see it across the board on policy after policy.
Yeah, I mean, just in erasing it, it and obviously we can tell that it's this this collaborative effort, because we saw legislation vetoed by Governor Vito himself that would have protected women and girls in sports. here in Wisconsin and protected their opportunities. And I just see this as a huge step backwards. And, you know, I think I used the term progressive. There's certainly nothing progressive about taking away opportunities for girls and women and preventing their safety and security in places that should be safe for women and girls.
And there's so many on the radical left that are just afraid to say what is painfully obvious and right in front of us. And so it is an attempt to really just distort the reality of what we see right in front of our eyes. It's the same reason why their policies of defund the police were so dangerous. We all knew in the summer of 2020, in particular during a period of time of rioting in the city of Kenosha, that you need to reestablish public safety. You need to actually stand with the men and women of law enforcement, send in law enforcement to enforce the laws that are on the books. Everyone has a right to feel safe. But instead, we saw those on the left either cower and choose to not say anything at all, or to stand on the side of the absolute radical left and continue to demagogue our police officers and call for defunding the police. And so we continue to see those on the left refuse to stand with basic principles of reality. And it's a huge challenge to the future of our country and why this election over the course of the next 200 days is so absolutely essential.
Well, and I think about even State Representative Dave Considine. I don't know if that's how you pronounce his name, but his quote in the conversations they were having about these bills to protect women and girls, he actually said, he had the audacity to say, well, women and girls should just try harder if they are facing a biological male as their opponent in their given sport.
You just see people get so tied up, because once you head down the path of trying to not accept the reality as it is in front of you, you have to continue this process. Girls' sports should be for girls. Boys' short sports should be for boys. In particular, I was talking to a group of female volleyball players who were talking about the physical challenges they face if they're opposite a man on the other side of the court. These are kind of obvious things. The bodies between, in particular, high school girls and high school boys are quite different physically. From a safety standpoint, it makes total sense to make sure we're protecting girls' sports. But again, we see the radical left just wanting to gut core principles of both our country, but also our culture. It's a huge challenge that we face.
I had a guest on earlier this week, and I made a point to commit this to memory. He refers to it as the war on reality. And I mean, how many more examples can we present to the American people about this continued war on reality by those on the left?
No, that's exactly what we're looking at. And as we look out to this election, that's what it's going to be about. It's those on the radical left that want to pretend that the border's secure, as Homeland Secretary Mayorkas told Congress previously. It's why he needed to be impeached and why I was happy to impeach him. We need to have people that are willing to stand up and recognize the problems that we face as a country and then present solutions to solve it. It's no different than President Biden could easily take steps to massively move forward on border security. He could end catch and release. He could end the abuse of the parole system. He could reinstate stay in Mexico. He could restart border wall construction immediately. And if President Trump comes in on day one, all of those policies will be implemented. But instead, we have the Biden administration trying to hoodwink individuals, trying to hoodwink folks that the border is secure. You can turn on your TV, you can talk to anyone, you can talk to your local law enforcement. We all know the U.S.-Mexico border is not secure and why we need to put policies in place to do just that to secure it.
Yet another example of the war on reality. Can't believe their lying eyes. Well, Congressman Brian Stile, thank you so much for joining me this morning. I hope you have a great weekend. It was wonderful to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. We'll talk again soon. Going to the 10:30 news, followed by your calls on the other side. Here's your opportunity to weigh in on all the topics of the morning. 715-845-2155 on the Mega Ellefson Show on WSAU.